This is the AYG List with April Yvonne Garrett, part of the Tavis Smiley Network on Blog Talk Radio.
Don't sweat the technique.
On the AYG List, I talk with fascinating people. Some at the top of their game, others still climbing. All possessing an uncommon commitment to owning their stories and achieving their vision. I also navigate sometimes complex conversations that unpack and contextualize current events with thoughtful individuals who represent a diverse array of well-informed and passionately articulated perspectives.
Hang out with April on Facebook, peek into her world on Instagram, and follow her on Twitter at the AYG List. Visit her inspiration, lifestyle, and social commentary blog at theayglist.com. And now, April Yvonne Garrett.
Don't sweat the technique.
Chaz Woodson is one of the most electrifying players in professional lacrosse. A midfielder for the MLL, Florida Launch, Chaz has been featured in Inside Lacrosse and Lacrosse Magazine and endorsed by Brian Lacrosse and New Balance. He's a champion for diversity and inclusion in the sport and is one of the founders of the Sankofa Lacrosse Alliance, bringing together the world's best African-American lacrosse players to promote the game in underrepresented communities. Tonight, we chat about how lacrosse has provided him with a platform to motivate and inspire others to reach their greatest potential. Chaz, welcome to the AYG List.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
So you were born in Sacramento, California, and raised in Norfolk, Virginia. So I'm trying to figure out between Sacramento and Virginia how you ended up with a lacrosse stick in your hand.
Well, Sacramento, I was born. My dad was actually stationed out there in the Air Force, and he had played. So he was actually a football player. He played football at Middlebury College and was kind of convinced or talked into playing a year of lacrosse there. But then when he got out, he was in California. He played club ball out there. So I've been around it pretty much since I was born. I wasn't in California very long, but, he also coached and taught. So, like I said, I was around it, even in Virginia.
When did you know that you loved it as a sport? When was it the thing that separated itself from, I know you had an interest in football and basketball as well when you were in high school, but what made lacrosse stand out to you?
Well, I always loved it. I always enjoyed it. It didn't really separate itself necessarily until basketball was out of the question. Going into my senior year of high school, I still had a great deal of interest in playing basketball collegiately.
Mm-hmm.
I knew my opportunities were going to be, I don't know if better is the word, but I definitely knew I'd have more opportunities lacrosse-wise collegially. But, as things began to shake out, lacrosse mm-hmm. was what was working for me. And so here I am, years later, still doing it.
Well, it's interesting because you are a pretty flashy player. So, I mean, there are some guys who love the sport, who are good at it, who are decently good at it. But you were doing some Gate Brother-like acrobatics with it. So I think that I think you're being a little modest with me because I think there's a little bit more to it than it kind of sussed itself out. I mean, do you remember the first time you had a lacrosse stick in your hand and you just said, okay, I'm going to connect with it, but I'm also going to finesse it?
That's an interesting take on it. I don't think I've ever heard it put quite like that. I was fortunate enough to play for a coach that understood the game and understood that creativity and fun is a part of that game.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this on the collegiate level or in high school?
This is on the high school level. And he would never say any of these things himself, but Coach Duquette is a guy that I hold in very high esteem, particularly when it comes to lacrosse. He's a great mind in the game. He's a four-time All-American. He's a member of, I think, three or four different Hall of Fames. He's been around the game. He's still coaching. He still learns the game. He's still a student of the game. And to play for somebody like that that's so knowledgeable but that also just allows you to play and allows you to be the player you are, the athlete you are, and I think that's what really kind of shaped my game. I guess, because I was never really given rules, don't do this, don't do this. It mm-hmm. was more of, this is what's supposed to happen, this is where the ball should go, this is how you're supposed to play,
mm-hmm.
now go do it your way. And so that's been able to translate for me, collegiately and professionally. I think even in college, I kind of had kind of was on a short leash for a little while, and then as I got better and began to make better decisions on the field, you know, that leash has let up a little bit, and I was able to play my game a little more.
Now, you went to Brown University in Rhode Island. It's an Ivy League institution. And as you said, your coach probably had you on a leash a little bit, wanted to make sure you had those fundamentals in order first. And
right.
Then he let you go. What was the experience like for you and your peers once you got to do what some call the more flashier style of playing lacrosse? I mean, what was the impact for you? What were you kind of known as? And how did that affect your peers?
I think for me it was I was able to play with a little more freedom mentally. So I wasn't so worried about making mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
I think early on in my career it was more of, you know, and I found this professionally too in a few different situations. But I think what I found is that once I wasn't worried about making mistakes and once I wasn't worried about how my playing moment to moment was going to affect my long-term playing, then I was able to just go out and do things. And,
right.
You know, I'm not really, contrary to popular belief, I'm not really ever out there looking to make some kind of flashy highlight reel play. And that's really never been my goal. I mean, from the time I was young all the way up to now, I think when you play like that, when you're looking for that type of thing, it doesn't happen for you. And so I think I became a more effective player just because I wasn't mentally hung up on anything. I could just go out and enjoy myself. And I think guys fed off of that a little bit. But
okay.
I was fortunate enough to play with some very good players. You know,
right.
We didn't, as a team, we didn't do as much as I thought we might, as much
mm-hmm.
as we collectively hoped. But
right.
I played with some very good players. So part of me being able to do that stuff was them being on the field with me.
Right, right. So you come from a line of lacrosse players. Your dad, as you said, played the game and continued to play after college, after Middlebury. And you're also in a sport where there are very few people of color, and it's seen as a really preppy white male sport. I'm a huge, huge lacrosse fan, originally from Baltimore, Maryland, where Blue Jays, Hopkins lacrosse is a big deal, even though I had an affinity for the Gate Brothers, and that was very unpopular around here. very unpopular around here. But it struck me always that I never had the opportunity to play myself in high school because we just didn't have a team for girls at my high school. And as I kept up with the game, my connection to the game was managing the men's team or managing the boys' team at my high school and my college. I loved doing it, but I always had that thing about never having the opportunity to have the access to the stick on my own, because
right.
I didn't go to a prep school. I went to a public school in Baltimore. All that said, you know, I'm wondering if you had a sensibility kind of going into it on the collegiate level, and we'll start to talk some more about the pro level, about the numbers, A, increasing, especially for your generation, but also kind of the tenor of the sport and how the sport is perceived. You've been very public about some of the things that have happened since you turned pro, but I want us to focus now on your college years and what that was like for you.
I was very aware of the lack of faces of color
mm-hmm.
in the game. You know, I was aware of that from the time I was little all the way up through, you know, when I graduated high school and into college. But to me, it was never really a big deal. It was something that I always would have liked to see. But I, you know, in terms of focusing on it or paying attention and trying to push other players of color or athletes of color into the game, that was not something that I really embarked on until after college. But it was definitely something I was aware of, even going into college. I mean, I only knew of, you know, I knew of Damon Davis, who was a couple years older than me. I knew of Jim Brown. I knew John Christmas, who was my age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I knew him mostly from, you know, seeing him on the camp circuit and reading about him online and in magazines. Outside of that, I really didn't, you know, other than the guys I played with and the few guys that I played against, I didn't know any other people of color in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Any other
mm-hmm.
black people, let alone people of color, Hispanic, Asian, or otherwise. So Yeah, it was an interesting dynamic. I definitely, there were a lot of times where I felt not lonely, but alone in the game. It wasn't something that, especially when I was growing up, I was kind of in two different worlds when it came to rec sports, basketball and lacrosse. I was around. Right. I mean, basketball and football, I was around all, for the most part, young black men. Right. And when I got into the lacrosse world, or when I was one of the only. And then if I'd bring a lacrosse stick out to a football practice or something like that, everybody looked at me crazy. Or if I was walking around with it, people looked at me crazy. But what I did notice as I got a little bit older, let's say I was wearing a lacrosse T-shirt or something like that, I would notice that older black men and women that would see me that knew about the game would always kind of congratulate me and encourage mm-hmm. me. Even when they, whether they had played or whether they, it didn't matter. It just, they knew what the game was about. They knew who was playing, and they knew that me being a part of it was a big deal. And I didn't really realize how big a deal it was. To me, it was just, I was one of the only black people I knew that was playing the sport.
Right, right. So after Brown, did you go immediately into the lacrosse league, or was there some time between undergrad and you going into pro?
I went right in. In fact, I graduated on a Sunday. Was at the MLL draft and combine on a Tuesday. Drove home Wednesday. Drove to Philly for my very first game on Saturday.
Wow.
Drove home on Sunday. Moved to Miami on Monday. So that was my week. And that first season, I was a Teach for America Corps member. So that first season, I actually didn't play very much. I think I played 3 games just because, number one, I was a rookie. Number two, my schedule was allowed because with Teach for America, we had to go to their institute. So we had a 5-week boot camp training in Houston. So they were...
Right.
They would have had to fly me in from Houston every weekend. So between that and being a rookie anyway, that they weren't really trying to spend that money. So the first season I kind of had off, but I was essentially involved. And then it really kind of took off the next year.
The Boston Cannons are my favorite team so far. I got to tell you that. I have a Boston
really?
Sticker. Yes, I'm not even going to put it on my car until the spring, but I do
even,
have a
even, yes. Even more than the Florida launch?
Oh, okay, we can talk about that later. But everybody can buy for my attention because you do realize that I am a Baltimore Ravens fan by default, but I love the Patriots, and I adore Tom Brady. So, again, very unpopular. I've always had these weird things going on with me and my team. It's like, love Hopkins, but you can't fade the Gate Brothers. Love the Ravens, but you can't fade Tom Brady. It's like, it's just always been, that's how it's a weird thing. Now, I don't do that with Kenyon because they would murder me because we just don't do that. But we're going to get back into the MLL. So the MLL was kind of a new-ish thing, and people are still trying to figure out the difference between the box lacrosse and regular lacrosse and how this whole professional league thing works. I still think that people are trying to figure it out. Folks are very excited about it. There are lots of people who are like, lacrosse should be in the Olympics. I'm one of them. But as you were kind of conceptualizing, you clearly have other goals outside of lacrosse. But as you were conceptualizing how you would continue along with the game after undergraduate, tell me a little bit about what that process was aside from I'm just going to do the combine. Like, did you think – I want to do this based on my skill set, based on my interest, based on the fact that there are very few African-Americans in the game. Was a combination of all of those things? What was your sensibility about it?
Truth be told, it was one of those things where I believe the league started in 2001. I don't remember if that was the exhibition year or if 2000 was the exhibition year. But, at that point, it was like every year the league was – going to fold, there was, whether it was true or not, that, that was the rumor, that was the talk, like, this can't last.
Yeah.
So, for me, I was never really like playing professionally, kids now have the opportunity to look up at the MLL and look at those guys and say, that's where I want to be. I want to go do that.
Absolutely.
To me, that was not something that was really on my radar. It was kind of like, you know, when I got to my probably junior year, I guess, it was like, well, you know, if it's around, I guess I'll give it a go. By my senior year, it was sort of, well, I might as well give it a shot while it's around because, you know, that would be that's something that is pretty cool to say that I did, you know.
Yeah, you'd be a part
of
that
history. To be able to play the sport. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I was. And, you know, if you had asked me at that point whether I thought I'd still be playing now, I don't think I'd even think the league would be around. But, you know, it's been a good ride. I think when I did get into it and people asked me how long I'd play, my whole thought process was I'm going to play as long as I'm healthy enough to keep playing the way I'm used to playing. And yeah, I'm on the tail end of that for sure, but you know, so far so good. I made a pretty nice career out of it, I think. You know, there's not a whole lot of guys that can say I'm pushing the 10-year mark.
Right.
I think this will be my ninth. So there's not a lot of guys that can say they did it this long.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting to me and anybody who's a fan of the game that in the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, maybe 5 years really, you have marquee players who are coming out of lacrosse who are actually, you know, burgeoning as major athletes representing the game, you know, the Paul Rabels of the world.
Right.
But tell me how you guys are thinking through that, negotiating, and clearly lacrosse is a different kind of fraternity, in men's lacrosse in particular. How are you guys thinking through that? What are some – because there – I mean, I'm seeing endorsement deals for lacrosse that I never thought I would see ever for the game.
Right.
So tell me about what you have seen as the evolution of that and the impact that it's not only had on some key individuals within that sport who are doing really, really well, but on the game in general.
I think that's one thing to keep in mind anytime this discussion comes up is that in the grand scheme of it all, it is only a few individuals that are really profiting in terms of, you know, just pure marketing and endorsements and that type of deal. There are more and more of them. I think where you're seeing the biggest impact is that guys are able to make a living on lacrosse.
Right.
There's a lot of guys doing that now, you know, between the camps and club teams and tournaments and working for various retailers and companies. More than ever, guys are able to be lacrosse players full-time or at least be in the game full-time. And I think that's a very big difference between when I got in the league and now. Paul Rabel, I think, is in a class all by himself.
No question.
When it comes to the endorsements and everything. And I think, you know, I think in a lot of ways he is the prototype for what the future lacrosse player will be. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he can shoot the heck out of the ball.
Yes, sir.
And he's skilled, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I think those are the type of athletes when you look at just based on his size and speed and ability to move, he is, you know, he's a football player playing lacrosse.
It's kind of true.
You know, I mean, just if you, yeah, if you look at him,
yeah,
that's really what that comes down to.
Yeah, he kind of is. Well, and a lot of these guys are. A lot of you guys are. I mean, when I was in high school, when I was in college, you know, it was the football coach who was also coaching lacrosse that got his guys into lacrosse so they would stay in condition. So that's how a lot of the guys got into the game. Okay, got it.
Exactly. And I think, you know, you still look around, there's a ton of guys, in terms of, you know, shape and size and to some degree even speed, you know, there's a lot of variability. But I think what you'll see is more and more of those guys, especially now with this whole concussion thing going on.
With football.
The focus on it with football, you're going to see a lot of those guys that are already that big and that fast and that strong with lacrosse sticks in their hands. Instead of seeing guys that, you know, they were two-sport athletes, they were football and lacrosse, but couldn't play football at the next level. You're going to see some of those guys that are choosing lacrosse instead of football.
Because they see it as viable. Yeah.
Exactly.
Viable. let me kind of clue down a little bit, because also, I mean, you've had some endorsements. Kyle Harrison has some great endorsements.
Right.
What do you see as, and it's all also, I don't know if you know numbers. I don't know numbers off of the top of my head. There are very few people of color who are playing at the pro level. So
right.
The viability for them to choose professional lacrosse as a lane for them that can meet all of their needs. I mean, where you don't have to teach on the side or whatever, where you can kind of build a brand. I mean, do you feel like the league, the sport itself, the folks who take in the sport are willing and welcoming to people who don't look like the average stereotypical lacrosse jock?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think they're open to it. I think the lacrosse world is open to it. The league itself, maybe. And that's just a purely personal take on it.
Got it.
You know, it's not a knock against the league, but I do think that in terms of marketing players, they don't do a great job with that. You know,
mm-hmm.
they pick their one or two guys every year to really make the face of the league, and understandably so, but I think if you're not one of those top two, three, whatever guys, then they don't do a great job with that. And so it is kind of left up to the individual players to sort of market themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the almost the only way to do that is to be on a camp scene, be on a tournament scene, be in the, you know, somewhere where you have access to loads and loads of kids.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, it gets kind of tough. But yeah, I mean, I think they're open to it. And again, it comes down to, and that's anybody. That's not just players of color. But then where you see it impact the players of color is that there just aren't that many of us, as you mentioned.
Right.
You know,
how
so,
many do you think are currently in the league at this point? And we're just talking MLL.
MLL, think on act. Well, I may have been the only one on an active roster last year. Maybe.
Wow.
I don't know that for certain.
But
we'll keep talking, and I'm going to pull up a picture and do some counting. But you know, in the MLL, you know, just off the top, Roger Ferguson was a Brown grad. He was a rookie last year. Jovan Miller, but he ended up not finishing the season on an active roster.
Is Kyle still playing?
Matt Casey. Kyle Harrison is playing LXM.
Okay.
There's a handful of guys that are playing on the LXM tour. But yeah, Matt Casey is another one, but he was not. I don't think he finished the season on an active roster. So yeah, the numbers are very
tricky stuff. Yeah. So this is
Kind
of tricky stuff, and part of it is as a business, right? Because sports is a business, and
mm-hmm.
as a business, you have to absolutely reach your core audience. You know what your core audience
exactly.
looks like, right? And even as we're in this process of trying to explore diversity issues within the sport, you still have to kind of go to your base. And then as you're expanding your base, to do it carefully with the resources that you have. I mean, especially for a league
right.
that you're saying is possibly closing every year. I don't think that that's going to happen in this moment. And I do think we've got momentum
on
our side. I think we're clear
right.
on this point, which is great. And yet it's a really kind of interesting moment for the sport because there are so many opportunities on the gender level, on the race level, on the class level, on so many different levels for NLL, for all these, you know, pro teams that are doing for our MLL, NLL, all of these different iterations of it. And I think at some point, U.S. lacrosse, whatever, they're going to have to streamline it and get to the public what each thing is doing and how they're all working together for the public to be able to latch onto it as well in a way that's going to really bring in the big bucks so that talented people like yourself and folks who are coming after you can see it as a viable option for them to be professional athletes, taken well care of, and all of that good stuff.
Right.
In all of this, you've succeeded at a very high level in a sport, again, that has very few people of color in it. But that hasn't come without some, I would call them, sort of racial wounds and indignities. I read an article you penned after a specific incident happened with Warrior Lacrosse that also seemed to me to be contemplative of your time in the sport and some of the racial wounds that you've kind of suffered in the sport. Could you talk a little bit about that and talk also about how you turned those types of interactions with people that were definitely disconcerting into opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's anytime something like that comes up, to me it's an opportunity for discussion. And I think that was that was my biggest agenda there. And I say my, I should be saying our. When that campaign came out, Kyle and I were on the phone.
Make sure you tell the audience what the campaign was, because I did not.
Okay. Right. Yeah, and you know what? I generally try to avoid bringing it up because I think that's essentially just publicity for them.
But you don't even have to.
But,
you can just.
Well, yeah. Essentially, the campaign was Ninja Please for a particular shoe that they had coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those of us in the know, we know that I don't know if I can say it on the – yeah, I can say it on
the
here,
N-word.
Right?
Yeah,
so,
N-word.
Yeah, N-word, please, we'll say. You know, and whether they intended to push that boundary or not is really out of – to me, is out of the question, because they're a major company – You know, a major athletic company, really. That, you know, they're not Nike or anything like that, but they are owned by New Balance. So it's a major company, and having been a part of it because I was signed with Brian, I know they have marketing companies working with them. So, you know, a quick Google search would have pulled this up. For them to go through with it either means it was intentional or it was completely negligent. And I think both of those are a problem. Now, again, you know, when it comes down to it, if it's offensive to somebody, I won't say somebody, but if it's something that is, it could easily be construed as offensive, then it shouldn't be done. So because race has, it's the elephant in the room in lacrosse that nobody wants to talk about, I found this to be an opportunity to discuss race in lacrosse versus discussing the campaign itself. And I got on a conference call with Kyle and Jovi and probably about, I don't know, 7-8 others, Thomas and Harry Alford. Gosh, who else was on there?
Milton the Bratton Brothers.
The Bratton Brothers.
Right.
There were a bunch of us. And we just kind of talked through this, and I guess what came of it was me kind of writing that article and then seeing where the discussion went from that. And we kind of did our best, or at least I did my best to not chime in too much, because that's something that I like to do, whether it's on that or anything else. I kind of like to put a thought out there and then kind of see where it goes, see where other people take it. And it was interesting, you know. For a couple of weeks, it sparked some real discussion.
I'm black. You're black. We both love blacks. We know it's not perfect when it comes to this, right? So, I'm a follower. I follow all of this stuff. I follow Paul Rabel on Facebook and Twitter. And a couple of weeks ago, Paul was at my high school alma mater's rival school. I can't say it because I'll get beat up by people, seriously. And he was working, he was doing stick work with some of the boys at the school. Took a really cute picture with all of these gorgeous African-American boys. Some of the comments in the feed sent me over the top, right? Doesn't diminish the work that Paul is trying to do or whatever, but those sentiments are out there, right? And so...
Yep.
So a part of it is, you know, as I'm reading the article that you penned about all of this, where you were saying, my brothers on my team, my brothers in the sport have called me out of my name. Part of this is the stuff that we don't talk about in any sport, in any arena, or any arena professionally. We can get into that, but we're talking about the arena of sport at this point.
Right.
And there's so much we can unpack about black men and their bodies and race and conjecture and all of these things. But just to be holding a stick and running down the field and doing your thing and then have somebody call you out of their name, folks who know better, folks who know about the weight and gravity of race and racism, we understand where that kind of diseased mind and inferiority comes from, because there's a language and an understanding of history that has been little challenged, right, going forward, that, you know, we've all been kind of taught and encased in this kind of racial lens in this country and globally. But there is a real impact. One, I applaud you for stepping into the fray and having the conversation based on your personal experience and the best way you knew how. I applaud the brotherhood of the other African-American men to get together and at least try to figure out a discursive space where you could kind of sort through it and figure it out and say, okay, this is how we choose to respond to it. Because the other side of this is you still have to play, right? These are still your brothers. This is still a league that you're kind of responsible to. And I don't think any black person in America cannot, you know, empathize with having to deal with the dishonor and disrespect that we get in professional arenas from time to time based on our race or our gender or whatever, and then still having to do a job, right? So I know that who was it? Was it Jovan who said, I'm going to be out if you guys don't do something about somebody threatens to, you know, so people at very, very different levels said, I'm putting some sweat into this game and I'm going to make you do something about this. And to each his own as far as that goes. But it was, I think it was a very big public lesson for the sport. And I think it's one that we're going to be sorting out for many, many moments to come. But I do want to applaud you and everyone else who stepped up to the table to begin to push it forward. And I want to applaud U.S. Lacrosse for making diversity and inclusion an important thing we're discussing. I don't think it's going to be easy for them. And I think those of us who love the sport, who are a part of the sport as fans, as boosters, as athletes, or whatever, we're going to have to help them, right?
Right.
So
yeah,
part
absolutely.
Of making the job for you easier is if Aprils show up at games, be they professional or collegiate, so that they see faces in the crowd, and so they understand that this is some, these are people we have to market to. And also responding on social media and the like and saying, hey, this is a sport we love, but we'd like to see more of this happen. And so, like I said, I applaud the diversity issues. And you also had an initiative, the Sankofa, was it the Sankofa Lacrosse League? What was it called?
Right. Sankofa Lacrosse Association. And, you know, kind of on the heels of what you were saying, I think that was our biggest point, especially when Kyle and I talked about it before we even jumped on a call, was that we are now in a position, and that's the whole big thing with lacrosse for me. It's given me this platform. And I'm in a position now, particularly as a black man in the sport, that I couldn't just overlook that situation. You know, on behalf of the sport, on behalf of myself and my peers, and on behalf of all the young men and young women that are coming up in the game behind me, we felt a responsibility to address it. And our whole agenda was to not be confrontational, but to make sure that people understood that it had to be addressed. And so that kind of brings us back to the whole Sankofa initiative. This is something that Kyle and I had been, oh my gosh, we've been working on this and conference calling and emailing and building contact lists, and we've been working on this for probably four and a half years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just from the very beginning of what we were talking about, and it started a while back. Kyle, John, and I were approached in probably 2006.
Mm-hmm.
2005, 2006, or maybe 2007, somewhere in there, about being part of a black national team, or an African-American national team. Now, long story short, that initiative fell apart because of some, let's say, less than professional goings on.
Got it.
And we sort of distanced ourselves from that. But then, you know, about a year or two later, he and I started talking, and, you know, the general idea behind what they wanted to get accomplished, because not everybody that was a part of that that group was wrong. Some of them were going about things the right way. It was sort of one person that kind of threw the whole plan off. But again, this is when Kyle and I were really starting to come into our own. You know, that I had just signed on with Brian. He was already with Nike and STX, and we were kind of big faces in the game at that point. And we realized that we couldn't let that opportunity go by, or let this opportunity go by, and that what they had begun, while it wasn't working at that point, was something that we wanted to continue. So this plan changed and evolved, and it's still changing and evolving as we speak. But it came together in the form of this team that we launched in October up at Brown. And the whole idea is to put together a team of ambassadors to the game and represent the faces in the game that are traditionally overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, to make sure the doors are open, the doors of opportunity are open to everybody that is a participant in the game. One mm-hmm. thing about lacrosse is that we sell the academic opportunities, we sell the networking opportunities, we sell the professional opportunities.
Right.
But many of those opportunities only come to the people that have played in college.
Right.
And most of them at the, you know, elite level.
Way elite level, yeah.
So, you know, for your kids that play at the club level or don't play after high school or mm-hmm. chose another sport to play, they don't get those same benefits that the rest of the lacrosse community is getting. And that's the case whether you're white, black, or whatever. So we want to make sure those doors are open to everybody. We talk about getting, you know, one thing we sell, and I sell a lot when we're talking to young people of color, is the opportunities that will open up that might not open up just from playing basketball or football. Well, that's great and all, but if it doesn't get you into one of those colleges, you're kind of shortchanged.
Yeah.
So that dream hasn't been fulfilled, especially since it's not a full scholarship sport.
No.
You know, you're talking 12 and a half scholarships per team for, you know, 35 kids.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we talk about, it can help you get into college and help you do this, that, and the third, but that's a little tricky. It's a little misleading. So what we want to do is make sure that those networking opportunities are open to everybody, because the guys that are playing, particularly at the professional level,
mm-hmm.
there's a wealth of professional fields that we're all involved in.
Right. Right.
And those connections go, you know, forever.
Right. So you're entering into your ninth year in the league, correct?
Yes, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yes.
You're an
actually,
old
yes.
I'm just going to say it.
Summer, I know. It's crazy. 10th summer professionally, 9th in the league.
And when does the season start, and who will you be playing with?
Well, as of now, I will be playing with the Florida Launch. It was a new team. And we kick in training camp, I believe, starts in mid-April. I kind of, after this U.S. tryout, I was pretty convinced that I was hanging up the cleats until they decided to come down to Florida. So now I'm a little bit behind, but I'm working to get myself in ready for camp.
Got it. Are you going to go to Denver? Well, tell everybody what's happening in Denver, first of all, because this is a big deal in lacrosse world, people. So I'm going to let you break that whole thing down.
Yeah, 2014, this summer, the Lacrosse World Championships are coming to the United States of America in Denver. That is a pretty big deal. And, you know, the United States team, which as of now, a lot of my buddies and former teammates are actually on this team. Professional teammates have made this roster, so I'm pretty proud of those guys. Obviously, you know, as we were talking about race, and Kyle Harrison has made the 30-man list, which is, this will be, if he makes that final cut, will be his second time on this team, which is kind of a big deal. So, that's taking place in Denver, and we are actually the Sankofa, and again, this, like I said, the Sankofa program is continuously evolving, mm-hmm. and it is soon, everything we do is going to sort of be centered around the team itself.
Okay.
Versus some of the other initiatives. But we are, through the generosity of U.S. Lacrosse, we are actually going out there as a team.
Nice.
The ambassadors team is what we call it, but we're headed out there to be a part of the open tournament in the division. So I will be out there this summer. I will not be participating in the actual world games, but I'll be a part of the whole process. So
that's great. Good. What I love also is that apparently we have our first team from the continent of Africa who will be participating.
Yes.
From Uganda. Yep. Is that correct?
That is correct. And they've actually been in touch with us about trying to do some things in terms of promotion for them and some fundraising activities, et cetera. So there's a possibility that we will have our ambassadors team scrimmaging team from Uganda at some point.
That's exciting. And there are a lot of the top guys in the game who really supported that effort. I saw a lot of traffic on Twitter and Instagram and all that in support of that. So that's a really good look. That's a really good look. You know, this is another question I have as we're talking about the diversity in sport, because I always say to people that diversity is important for the people who feel underrepresented, but it's also really, really important for the people who are in the majority population. Tell me a little bit about how your brothers who are doing well in the sport, who have a lot of gravitas in the sport, are they supporting your efforts? How is this all playing out there?
I think, by and large, everybody has supported it. I have to really thank Coach Tiffany, Lars Tiffany at Brown University, has been overwhelmingly supportive of this, and the Brown Athletic Department as well, which is why we were able to launch that program up there. In fact, Kyle and I will be running a camp there through the Brown Lacrosse program this summer, and hopefully we'll be back there in the fall again to do some things. So they've been very supportive of it. We've had some other coaches reach out that have been very supportive. And like I said, some of the other names in the world have reached out and shown their support. And some of those will be a part of this. That's one thing. As we launched the first piece, it was an all-black team, and that was actually very important to do it that way at the time. Moving forward, it will probably, and it may, it's, you know, here and there may be all-black, but more important for us is to have a delegation of black faces on that team, but more importantly is to have guys that are, again, representative of what we're calling ourselves, the ambassadors, guys
right.
that are out helping to grow the game and helping to create these opportunities for all the kids that are coming up in the game. So, you know, some of those people will be involved with this team as we move forward as well. Yeah, there's been a lot of support. There's been a little bit of kickback, people that were unsure, and that's the very interesting piece of this to me, is that as much as we talked about, Kyle did, I did most of the kind of interviews, I guess, but, you know, Kyle's had to speak on it, I've had to speak on it, some other people, Jovi's been asked about things, and no matter how much we explained it, the fact that we put an all-black team on the field was still a little unsettling to some people.
Yeah.
They couldn't get it, and they didn't really want to get behind it. They weren't sure if they could or should support it, especially since we called it the Sankofa Lacrosse Association, which is
right.
an African term. So that was kind of tricky and interesting that I didn't think we would get that kind of feedback, but we did. I expected to get some of the, you know, the general commentary. Why does it have to be all black? Why does it have to be about race, this, that, and the third? That's to be expected. But the fact that there were some bigger names in the sport that were so unsure of it was kind of interesting to me.
Well, I think, you know, to be candid and as in this whole how do we talk about race thing, there are two things I want to share with you. One, Dikembe Mutombo and I are friends, and I remember when he started to do his work in raising money for the hospital that he established in Africa, and he was really kind of concerned because, or let me just say it this way, Dikembe was concerned that there was a difficulty with him conveying the importance of that hospital at that time in the late 90s, early 2000s, in the American context. And I said, basically, you're in a culture where people have no real concept of what's happening there. And so in addition to you using your largesse to get this done, you have to teach. And, you know, it's the Cliff Notes version, but you have to teach. And he did it really well.
Right.
And got some support, and he locked in some key people. The other thing I will share is that I was having a conversation with a friend of mine from undergraduate who is a white woman. She's considering going back to work. She just had a kid. She's going back to work in the financial industry. And she was talking about like pulling together kind of A-type female persona that she needed to have to be successful in that arena, which is something she's not really tapped into being a mom. And she said something to me around the notion of, well, don't you get off on the fact that, like, you prove all of the white men wrong when you go in there and you just do your thing? Don't you get off on it? And I said to her, you know, when I was in my 20s, I did, because I didn't know any better. But the more that I understood who I was and my history, I get off more on the notion of success is me walking into a room and my full self as a black woman from Baltimore who, you know, went to Kenyon and Columbia and Harvard and likes lacrosse and likes football and all of those things, and not being told that I have to prescribe to a certain notion of how to be accepted and to be supported and to be heard. And the more that people like you and I and all the other people in your fraternity in this game step to the plate being who you are, and doing the work of saying this is something that you're missing, it's not necessarily going to happen overnight, but it is meaningful.
Right.
And so, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show, and because next month I'm going to have a panel of three women who are in the game of lacrosse, a coach, a friend of mine from Kenyon who is a coach's coach, and she coaches on the prep school level, and someone from the NCAA, is because we have to have these conversations about how there are ways in which sports in particular, you know, definitely supports a certain type of athlete. And when you start to push the boundaries about what those types are, then you get this friction and this pushback. And the bottom line is, in order for this to work for women, for people of color, for other groups that have not been kind of put into this arena in a comfortable way, we have to push the envelope, but we also have to do the education. So part of this show is my desire to educate people about folks who are in the game with excellence, folks who are doing the work, that it's not always that easy. And, you know, I think part of what we need to do through this conversation is to tell people how they can help us do this work of, you know, this diversity and inclusion work. It's not just the job of the college or the league or the player. You know, if we are fans, right, fans have a duty and responsibility to send an email, to tweet out something, to have their physical being. Like, I think the optic of seeing an all-black team means something to players that never saw themselves as a viable, you know, entity, as a part of this game. For the folks who have always been there, it also means something. It threatens them in a way. And it shouldn't, right? It shouldn't.
Right.
But part of it is having the conversations, I think, with the leadership of the sport, starting the conversation and bringing people in who are good at having the conversation, right? It's just like the NBA and every other league, they have those diversity workshops and they have, you know, the sexism workshops. They need to do that in every league. So I think that part of it is when you're trying to figure out how you do this thing and how you continue to give back to the sport is you guys positioning yourselves as those types of ambassadors. And, you know, they need somebody to go around to every team and talk about these issues because it's important. It's important for the people who – it's amazing to me in 2014, I am talking to a man who's, what, 31 years old, and you are literally, you know, building the history of people of color in this sport. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And it's the first sport we ever had, you know, in North America. So, you know, there are ways in which we can have this conversation where I think it'll get people to be more open to understanding. But given the fact that we do have a context where most folks don't really get that because that's not how we teach history and that's not how we teach each other to understand each other, it's a challenge. So I applaud you for moving in that direction. But you are also doing additional work through your own companies and businesses and initiatives. So tell us about Chaz Woodson Initiatives.
Chaz Woodson Initiatives is another thing that is ever-evolving. Initially, this started off as my camps and clinics and a way for me to work and kind of work on my own to do some mentoring and continue my lacrosse career with a little bit of freedom of movement. And what I'm focused on now, my speaking, I love every bit of it. I enjoy motivating. I enjoy speaking to young people. I'm also doing some writing. Obviously, the lacrosse piece is going to be a staple. So my camp will be in there. I'll continue to run that. I'll continue to build that. But what I would really like to focus on is my ability to reach and touch the lives of other people.
What lights you up?
What lights me up? Other people being motivated. Other people finding something in what I'm able to say to them that picks their spirits up or motivates them to get busy doing something that they have been putting off or that they love or that they have always wanted to do. And working with kids just in general lights me up. That's something that, you know, I've been doing that since I was in middle school, was working with people that were younger than me. And I think that's always been my drive and motivation.
If you were not doing what you are doing now, what would you be doing?
I would actually probably be teaching again.
Mm.
If I was not doing what I was doing, what I'm doing now, I would probably be back in a classroom teaching. If you had asked me when I came out of college what I'd be doing, I'm pretty sure I'd be teaching right now.
Mm-hmm.
Education is something that has been big in my family, and it's been big for me. And, you know, I like to stay close to education.
What do you want my listeners to leave this interview knowing about you, believing about you?
Oh, you know, we've had discussions about it, but life is a team sport. For me, nothing I'm doing lacrosse-wise is about me.
Mm-hmm.
The only piece of it that's about me is that I enjoy it. I get more excited to play every time I get an email from somebody saying that that I've inspired them to play.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, or that they read something on Twitter or my Facebook post or something like that that it motivated them to do something. Because lacrosse has given me this platform to do it. So, I enjoy lacrosse, but I enjoy the benefit of being able to reach other people through it more than anything else.
I know that your work with Sankofa and sort of the brotherhood that you've pulled together with these other African-American men in the game will continue. If you could say something to the younger African-American men in particular, but who are looking at the sport, who are considering the sport, what would you say to them?
Much the same as I would say to anybody that's young and coming up in the sport. The game will treat you right if you treat it right. I've been the beneficiary of countless opportunities through this sport because I think I've done right by the sport. You know, and I've met people through this sport that would give me the shirt off their back if I needed it.
Right.
White, black, and other.
Right.
And I think that makes this game so much different than other sports. It's the only sport where you can look at somebody's shorts and all of a sudden you've got a conversation starter.
Yes.
I have numerous people in Miami just because I saw a lacrosse penny they were wearing. You know, some of them are guys that I have. One guy I bumped into at Halloween, he couldn't come up with a costume, so he dressed as a lacrosse player. All of a sudden, we start talking, and I've got him coaching at another school down here. I ran into a guy at Chipotle one time who had on some lacrosse shorts. He coached with us for 3 years. You know, and the list goes on and on and on. One of my favorite things to do, actually, is when I'm in the airport during the season, I can be Chaz Woodson all day on Twitter, but if I'm walking through an airport, nobody knows who I am. So
right.
I like to, especially in the Baltimore airport and BWI,
hello.
I like to roll up on little kids because they're always in there. They're always coming from some tournament or camp or whatever it is, right? So I love to roll up on them and just start talking about lacrosse, and they have no idea who I am. And sometimes I play dumb, like I really don't know anything about lacrosse, but I notice their shorts or their shirt. And just see how long I can go with the conversation until usually, every now and then I get away with it. We talk for a little while and I say bye and that's that. But usually at some point they say, oh, did you play? And I say, oh, yeah, I played a little bit. And How'd you play in college? Yeah, I played at Brown. I leave it at that. And then, you know, I go on my way and I'll stop and get something to eat. And all of a sudden they come back and they're like, are you? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's me.
That's neat.
So it's fun, but, like, you know, you can't just roll up on somebody that has a Bull shirt on and say, hey, you play basketball? No. They're going to look at you crazy.
Right.
You know? It's an awesome sport with countless opportunities that will open up for you, and there's so many great people that you meet through this game. The guy I coach with now, we sparked up a conversation at a fall ball game. Turns out his best friend was one of my high school coaches. And that's how I got the job. That's why I've been coaching there with them now for 7 years. But that's what this game does for you. And if you're willing to look past for a lot of young people of color coming up in the game, if you can get past the fact that you may be the only one on your team for a little while, the benefits will certainly outweigh that. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole brotherhood, sisterhood, family, fraternity out here that's behind you.
What would you tell some of your brothers who were a little bit reticent to your way of starting a movement of having a physical optic of diversity in the game through Sankofa? What would you say to them as far as loosening up their attention about your effort and what you're trying to do? What do you think they're missing that you want to communicate?
I'm glad you put that last part in because I was just going to be really real.
I'm like, wait.
And blunt. But,
Puff the brakes.
Yeah. No, I think it comes sort of back to what you were saying, is that educating people on is a big, big piece of this. When we were at Brown, I think we were fortunate enough to have a little time where we sat down with the guys from the Brown team that were not in class. The English national team was there. Some other representatives from the Brown Athletic Department. Fred Opie was another guy who played at Syracuse. I don't know if you know him or not, but definitely a good guy to connect with. But he was there filming, and, you know, and we got to, and he actually gave a lot of the history of black players in the game. And Kyle and I got to talk about what this project meant and why we were doing it. And I think, again, that little bit of education completely opens things up.
Yeah.
So it becomes less about there being a black team or a team with a lot of black players on it, as much as it is showing how far we've come. Because it wasn't, you know, 10 years ago, we couldn't have put this team together.
Yes, that's right.
You know, we had a list, and, you know, a lot of the guys that we initially pegged to come up with this couldn't even make it. We had a list of 30, 35 guys that could all be on this team that have all played at pretty high levels. You know, the guys that didn't play professionally still played at pretty high levels, but they're all, for the most part, right around my age group,
you know,
and younger. A handful of us at my age group and then the rest younger. And that couldn't have happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So this was a celebration of the fact that we've made it this far in the game. And that those opportunities will continue to grow. You know, it's not about trying to take over the game. It's celebrating where this game has come.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell my audience how they can find you on social media.
Oh, man. I am at Chaz Woodson on Twitter. On Facebook, I am Chaz3 or Official Chaz Woodson. I think Official Chaz Woodson is the fan page, quote unquote. It's all the same stuff. I just can't add any more friends, I think, to the original page. So I pretty much post anything on Facebook. I post to both of them. My Humble Swagger, which is a part of another project. That's another Twitter handle. Instagram, My Humble Swagger. And Chaz Woodson may have been taken on Instagram. Instagram is something I'm really just starting to get into. So
no kidding. You don't have anything on Instagram, dude. I know.
I know. When you looked at that, you probably looked at it less than 24 hours after I created it. I did have, like, the Humble Swagger one I've had up for a few months, but I'm still just getting into Instagram. Part of that is, you know, well, forget it. Yeah, I'm just getting into Instagram, but I'll get there.
All right, I think it's official Chaz Woodson on Instagram, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's official Chaz Woodson.
Yeah, because I think Chaz Woodson was, you know what it was? I created one a while back, and I was like, I don't know how to use this. I'm cutting it off. So I cut it off, and it wouldn't let me get it back.
You're so dating yourself right now for my entire
life. I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. But you know what? I'm not that far removed. You know what it is? I try to avoid stuff that's going to distract me from getting stuff done. Look, entrepreneur life, if you're not working, you're losing money.
That's exactly.
You know, and forget money. I got bills to pay. So I try to minimize my distractions. Because I can already distract myself enough with random things, so I avoid it.
Right.
It's part of the deal these days. You gotta be on.
That's right. Well, Chaz, I'm really excited that I started following you on Twitter, and then we started interacting that way. And thank you so much for supporting a lot of the work that the AYG list is doing, and especially with your love for Jenny Vanderlinden, who's been on my show 4 times. You know
Absolutely.
How much I adore that woman. She's been having some rough times. She's amazing. And so are you. And part of the reason why I invited you on the show, besides the fact that I'm a fan and I could watch your highlight reels forever. I mean, seriously, I'm a fan. But I really do appreciate the fact that you have taken on more than just your love of the sport, which is kind of an easy thing to do. You can kind of get in there and skirt around and you see kind of issues of diversity. And you could kind of say, all right, that's not my thing, or I don't have to do that because I'm just here to play this game. But you took on another important way of engaging the sport and not just doing it on your own behalf, but on behalf of other people who are underrepresented in the sport, which does not just do something for those people. It does something for the game. It does something for the people who are in the majority of the sport as well. One of the things that I do is I'm connected with folks who are younger in the game on college teams and on high school teams, and they're so much more diverse than anything that you or I were ever used to. And that
Way
has
more.
Everything to do. I know. It's amazing. And that has everything to do with what folks like you did and John Brown and John Christmas and all of these people did so that that was possible for them. So I'm big on making sure that younger people understand the context in which they have been able to participate in things that they were not in large numbers. So thank you for that, and thank you for being a stand for the sport. And I'm hoping, as I share this interview and you share this interview with others, that it will get U.S. lacrosse and all of the lacrosse leagues to start thinking about ways to make use, especially the folks who have retired, and helping them with their diversity and inclusion initiatives and sending you guys out to teams and having you guys have this conversation. That is the best way to grow the sport and involving fans in that as well. Thank you so much for every effort that you have on the field and off. Thank you for being good for the game. I'm glad the game was good to you, but you were also good to it. And thank you so much for spending some time with me today on the AYG list.
The pleasure is absolutely mine.
You've been listening to the AYG List with April Yvonne Garrett, a part of the Tavis Smiley Network on Blog Talk Radio. The AYG List posts every Tuesday and Thursday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. April would love to hear from you on Facebook and Twitter and invite you to take a peek into her world on Instagram at the AYG List. Also, visit her inspiration, lifestyle, and social commentary blog, theayglist.com. Thank you for listening. Don't sweat the technique.